Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM Radio. POTUS channel 124. The number to call up as always is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS to simplify it. Thank you for joining me. This is the fourth edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Can't tell you how honored and privileged I am to have you as listeners and everything. I really, really appreciate the support. Thank you so much. I'm not in a very good mood. And I'm quite sure that I speak on behalf of millions of Americans when I tell you most of us shouldn't be in a good mood. I'm not going to use words like pissed off and all of that other stuff because I do have Hakeem Jeffries, House Democratic leader, coming on the show in just a few minutes. And I want to watch my language and I want to be cool and calm and composed, but I'm disgusted. I'm a little bit different than the Michael Smirkanishes of the world and Chris Cuomo's of the world and the Sean Hannity's and others, all of whom I know, respect, etc., because they live in this lane. I'm just an American citizen just like you, paying attention to what's going on, being a conscientious observer, reading the newspaper, watching the news, and trying not to get flustered and completely, utterly disgusted at what we're seeing here. But it's day 8 of this government shutdown. Hundreds of thousands of people have either been or will be furloughed, if not flat out fired. They'll lose their jobs. They'll lose the ability to pay their bills. And for what exactly? Because folks on Capitol Hill can't come to some kind of accord and get their act together. And me personally, I not only look at it, I'm not trying to play the blame game here because Hakeem Jeffries' work is very, very hard. Just like Joe Manchin, who was on last week before he retired from the Senate, his work was very hard. Just like Governor Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania, his work is very hard. Governor Spencer Cox of Utah, his work was very hard. Senator Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina, all of whom have been guests on this show over the first 3 weeks or so. Their work is very, very hard. I don't mean to impugn or insult anybody, but it's frustrating. It really is. And now that we get down to the nitty gritty and we hear words like, you know, the $1.5 trillion that the Democrats want to get a hold of and what have you, it's a number being used in all likelihood by GOP to attack Democrats and what they want to put back into the budget instead of passing a clean CR. And I get that. And for those of you who may not understand, the $1.5 trillion is not all upfront money to reopen the government immediately, of course. Much of it is projected long-term course from these policy changes over multiple years. So it's partly rhetorical to some degree, bundling immediate funding plus future commitments. We get that part. But nevertheless, it's still something that the American people have to deal with and they have to stomach. And why? Because somehow, some way, a continual resolution, a CR, that was agreed to in March for 6 months couldn't be extended to November, couldn't be permanently resolved to a point where we wouldn't have to worry about federal employees being furloughed or flat out fired. And right now, what we're reading from the Wall Street Journal and other places, what are they saying here? At the heart of the fight that has shut down the federal government are health insurance subsidies. We all know what that's about, okay? And so what are we talking about here? According to the Wall Street Journal, Democrats say they won't budge on their demand that Republicans support the higher federal subsidies they first passed in 2021, which hold down costs for people with Affordable Care Act plans. It's a core issue for the party's base, and Democrats hope their stance will help them score points with voters like Wallace, just the average voter out there reading. They was talking about one particular woman, Mrs. Wallace, whose monthly health insurance bill would likely rise sharply if the enhanced payments lapse. Republican lawmakers, on the other hand, have warned that unsustainable government spending is the issue. Over the years, they've repeatedly taken aim at the signature health law of former President Barack Obama. But some congressional Republicans have privately voiced concerns that the GOP will bear the blame if health care costs, rather, sharply increase as the midterm elections loom. You know something's wrong You know there's something in the water when even Marjorie Taylor Greene speaks up and speaks out against her own party in an effort to get issues like this resolved. Let's hear from her and what she had to say for a second.
Yesterday, I took to social media, and I'm not going to back down on this issue either. Health insurance premiums are out of control. Insurance is out of control in the United States of America. Health insurance, house insurance, car insurance. People can't afford it anymore. And I want Republicans to have a solution, and I'm demanding it. I don't think Democrats should be the one owning this issue because they want socialized health care, and we're $37 trillion in debt, and we can't afford that. However, the reality is many Americans are families especially are paying $2,000 a month for health insurance premiums with high deductibles, and many of them aren't even using their health insurance. They're just having to pay this payment, and it's unforgivable. And to allow Democrats to have some sort of moral high ground on this issue because they're the only ones talking about it, I think is a major failure from the Republican Party.
That's a damn good point she just made. And you don't hear me say that often about Marjorie Taylor Greene, but that's a damn good point she just made because she said, challenging her own party, the GOP, what the hell are you doing allowing the Democrats to have a high moral ground on this issue? You should be talking about this too. Why? Because a bunch of Republican states are using the Affordable Care Act. You know, a whole bunch of people in red states are under Obamacare. They don't want to say Obamacare. That's why we say the Affordable Care Act, but it's Obamacare. That's what it was called. They were certainly calling it that when it came into law, and they were talking about how much it was going to cost our country, the citizens in our country. Call it Obamacare now. And you know there's something in the water when even Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer out of New York, you understand, that you know the main Democrat in the Senate, listen to what he had to say in agreement with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Check this out.
So hold on to your hats. I think this is the first time I said this. But on this issue, Representative Green said it perfectly. Representative Green is absolutely right. Republicans can't sit by and do nothing while American families pay thousands more out of pocket for health care.
Enough. Then where was the urgency to get this done? See, this is where it gets stink. This is where it gets disgusting. Because on one hand, let's call it what it is. Let's keep it a buck, as they say. You have the president of the United States that doesn't really, really mind a shutdown. Because if you find yourself in a position where you can ultimately blame the Democrats, it would be good for you for the midterm elections. Not to mention the fact that this stuff is distractionary in some people's eyes. Because so much stuff comes up the minute you mention the Epstein files that suddenly here he is with another issue to distract your attention away from something else that you were focusing on. Meanwhile, if you're the Democrats, your attitude might be a revolt against voters. Let them have voters' remorse. Let them feel the pain for voting for this man back in office. And as a result, you're thinking about that instead of what's in the best interest of the country. See, my point that I'm making in saying all of this is that there's a legitimate argument that could be made that this could have been resolved months ago, that a shutdown could have been avoided, that it was never necessary. And yes, we've dealt with shutdowns before. That is absolutely true. It has happened before in this country. But that doesn't mean that times haven't changed and that the suffering that has taken place before our very eyes is palpable and paramount enough for us not to just shove it aside. For us not to just wear that level of frustration on our sleeves. For us not to be pretty ticked off at being in this position where you're concerned about your fellow man and woman in America as an American citizen and whether or not they're going to get their act together. But that's where it gets tricky. See, that's where I become a bit different than other people. And I'm not casting aspersions on anybody. I've mentioned a Michael Smirkanish. I mentioned a Sean Hannity. I mentioned a Chris Cuomo. I'll mention an Andrew Wilkow. I'll mention people on CNN and MSNBC. I don't care. I respect all of them. They live in this lane. They do this for a living. I don't. But I love doing this show. And I love talking to the American people because I want you to know I'm an extension of you. I'm like the damn umbilical cord that you put out front and center. I'm so sick of this stuff. That we find ourselves dealing with these issues that could have easily been resolved if you went to work. Didn't they have a recess and a vacation in August? Let me look at my producers and be reminded of that. The hell you doing going on a vacation when a shutdown for the government is looming? The hell you doing taking days off? See, these are the kind of issues, these are the kind of questions American citizens ask when stuff like this comes up. And then, by the way, we're not going to sit up here and just throw shade on the president of the United States. He's not innocent. He's not innocent. I got major problems with him, which I'll get into as the show progresses. I got major, major problems with some of the stuff the president of the United States has been doing. I really, really do. Whether, you know, it's listening to him, looking at one city after another, having the National Guard. It's Los Angeles one minute. It's Portland another. It's Chicago right now. It's Washington, D.C., even though that's over the purview of the federal government. That's him. He has a right to do it in Washington, D.C. I'm looking, threatening Baltimore. Not just National Guards, but military men and women. I'm very, very frustrated. But then you know what I did? And see, this is what makes me a little bit different. Because I'm a bipartisan individual when it comes to this stuff. I'm not taking sides. I said, why is this necessary? What is wrong with this man? You know good and damn well that when it comes to governors, they are the commander in chiefs of their respective state, that you have absolutely positively no business sending the National Guard into their cities, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Memphis, Tennessee, Portland, and now Chicago, even though with Portland, a judge temporarily blocked it. You know you have no business doing that. Why are you circumventing constitutional authority? What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? You know you have no business doing this. And then you got pundits who favor him talking about, well, you know what? I mean, Stephen A., come on. I mean, you look at the bodies dropping in Chicago. You see the kind of violence that's been permeating in D.C. or Memphis. Well, that's not the point. I understand something should be done. I think the governors of each state, whatever federal assistance he's willing to provide, if you know you've got crime being pervasive in your streets, you should want federal assistance. But the flip side to it is that while you may want that, and you should want that, that doesn't give him a right to impose it without your blessing. If you are a state in this republic, it's wrong. And then I said, you know something? I'm trying to find out what's wrong with this man. Why is he doing this? Then I thought about the impeachments. One was over the abuse of power. Allegedly, Democrats alleged that Trump pressured Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to announce investigations into Joe Biden and his son in exchange for U.S. military aid. The other one, obstruction of Congress for directing aides and agencies not to comply with House subpoenas. Those are the two ones for the first impeachment. The second impeachment, incitement of the insurrection. And of course, the people of the state of New York versus Donald Trump, 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in first degree, core allegations Trump's company logged hush money payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels as legal expenses to conceal a reimbursement scheme during the 2016 campaign for about $130,000. And then I said, you know something? I'm not justifying his actions. I'm not justifying his pettiness. I'm not justifying his acts of retribution and this revenge tour that he's on. But I can understand why I would annoy the living hell out of people. Why I would annoy the living hell out of him. And so even though it's ridiculous and petty and beneath the presidency, you could also take into account somebody being agitated enough to act that way. You know, I'm going to take a break in a little bit, but not before I talk to my guest. He is the 8th Congressional District of New York. He represents the 8th Congressional District of New York and is serving his 7th term in the United States Congress. Please welcome back to the show, House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Good afternoon. Good evening, sir. How are you? How's everything going?
Good. Great to be with you.
Thank you for coming on the show. I know you're very busy and I appreciate your time. First of all, where do we stand right now with this government shutdown? It's day 8. You held a press conference earlier this afternoon requesting that the House Republicans who've been on vacation since September 19th return to Washington to discuss the extension of the Affordable Care Act. First things first, where do we stand and have you spoken to Speaker Johnson, Mike Johnson?
Speaker Johnson and I haven't spoken today. But we continue to say to him, to Leader Thune over on the Senate side, and to the White House that we will sit down anytime, any place with anyone, either on the Capitol or back in the Oval Office, to reopen the government, which needs to happen, to enact a spending agreement that actually meets the needs of the American people, and do it in a bipartisan way. Democrats and Republicans sitting down and coming together to exercise common sense to arrive at the common good for the greatest number of people. And then, of course, we got to address this Republican healthcare crisis, because it's devastating people all across the country, whether you live in a blue state, a purple state, or a red state. This Republican healthcare crisis is devastating everyone.
How is it a Republican healthcare crisis? Explain to me, how is it a Republican healthcare crisis instead of all of y'all? I mean, well, all me y'all got something to do with it, right?
Yeah, well, let me give you five different things. No, they passed this one big ugly bill. Not a single Democrat voted for it. They did this. That was their signature piece of legislation this year. Largest cut to Medicaid in American history. By the way, this is after President Trump said in late January, we're going to love and cherish Medicaid. Really? And then you enact the largest cut to Medicaid in American history, right? That's problem number one. And they did it to reward their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks. That's their bill. Not a single Democrat in the House or Senate voted for it. Problem number two, as a result of this one big ugly bill, these are just the facts. The Republicans have set in motion a possible $536 billion cut to Medicare. They're going to hurt grandmothers and grandfathers and older Americans all across the country. Third problem, they refuse to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits. And as a result of that, tens of millions of Americans are about to experience dramatic increases in their healthcare premiums, copays, and deductibles when healthcare is already too expensive in the United States of America. Problem number four, because of their one big ugly bill, hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health clinics are closing all across America. This is happening in urban America, rural America, small town America, and the heartland of America. And problem number five is that they've effectively ended medical research in the United States of America. And in their appropriations bills, they're going after the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health. And then they're asking Democrats to sign off on the crisis that they've created.
When you listen to the folks on the GOP side, they'll tell you they're cutting illegals and able-bodied working people. That's specifically what they're talking about, nothing else. Are they accurate in saying that? Or are you saying that they're not telling the truth?
I mean, they are lying to the American people. And listen, the reality is the American people realize that we got testimony earlier today from a young woman, 29 years old, who lives in rural West Virginia, a state that Donald Trump won by 41 points. She is the sole caregiver for her older brother, who's both legally blind and incapable of caring for himself. She cares for him through Medicaid. He's able to actually be cared for in a loving environment because of Medicaid. Now that's at risk. Her hospital in the rural community that she lives is at risk of closing. And on top of all of that, she's a small business entrepreneur. She receives her health care through the Affordable Care Act tax credit program. If we don't extend it, she testified to us earlier today that her insurance costs are going to increase by thousands of dollars per year. She's getting hit on all sides. And what we're saying is that this is not a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. It affects people all across the country. And the crisis is upon us right now. We need to address it right now, along with, of course, Stephen, reopening the government and enacting a bipartisan spending agreement. We're not saying we want to do this on our own. We're saying we need to sit down and have a negotiation, the type of thing that you've been calling for, appropriately so, where we're sitting down and doing our jobs as opposed to House Republicans literally being on vacation the last few weeks, canceling votes last week, canceling votes this week.
So before I get to my next question, let me be very clear. No Democrats on vacation? I just want to make sure I ask a simple question like that, since you talked about House Republicans being on vacation. No Democrats on vacation?
Not a single Democrat on vacation. We were here last week, and we're here this week.
Let me get to this question, though, because I remember the CR that y'all, you know, y'all signed on for in March. That was obviously 6 months. It ended September 30th. If I remember correctly, I don't know whether the number was 12 or 13 times under Biden, you know, y'all signed on. I'm wondering why shut down now, considering the fact that you guys, when it came to a CR, that was something that y'all was willing to push forward when Biden was in office on numerous occasions.
Well, yeah, it's a really important question. I'm glad you asked it. Now, the thing that's interesting is that every single time we reached an agreement when Joe Biden was president, it was Democrats in the House, even though we were in the minority during the last 2 years of the Biden presidency, that provided the votes to keep the government open. We acted in a bipartisan way, consistently found the common ground with Speaker Johnson and before that with Speaker Kevin McCarthy to keep the government open and do it in a way that actually met the needs of the American people. The problem that we confront this time around is that throughout the Trump presidency, basically they've taken a go it alone, my way or the highway approach to governance. We've seen it all over the country. In fact, we've seen it throughout the world, this my way or the highway approach, right? Only I can fix it. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to believe that Democrats in the minority, in the House and the Senate, are the ones that shut the government down. Republicans have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. He's been acting like the all-powerful Wizard of Oz since January 20th. And now all of a sudden, we shut the government down? I think this is the reason why the American people blame them, because they know they're the ones who made the decision to shut the government down, because they'd rather do that than take care of the health care of everyday Americans.
Well, even since the shutdown, the reality is that the Democrats, I'm not saying that the public is specifically blaming the Democrats, but y'all poll numbers are not that impressive. A matter of fact, I mean, they've been relatively low last time I checked. So when you say that the American people are blaming the Republicans, evidently not enough, because they're pointing the fingers at the Democrats. Wouldn't you say that?
No. What I would say is that, of course, the American people are frustrated, understandably, and I think you've channeled that frustration. That makes sense. They're frustrated because they were promised that the cost of living was going to go down. In fact, they were told by Donald Trump costs were going to go down on day one. Costs ain't going down. They're going up. Electricity bills through the roof. Housing costs through the roof. Groceries through the roof. And now healthcare premiums are about to skyrocket thousands and thousands of dollars in additional costs per year. People are understandably frustrated. They were promised the golden era of America. That's not what we have in this country right now. And the American people know it.
In fairness to you, the Washington Post poll did show that Americans are blaming Trump and the GOP for the shutdown. So I realize that's what you were alluding to. I was alluding to a different poll. I think it was Real Politics or something like that. So I apologize for that. You're absolutely right. Let me get to this question for you. Republicans have called your demand for an ironclad deal on health care an obstructionist tactic. So what's the red line for Democrats regarding the Affordable Care Act, tax credits, and what specific concessions would be required to reopen the government, in your estimation?
Yeah, so this is a group of people, Republicans, remember, when they passed their one big ugly bill, largest cut to Medicaid in American history, as I previously mentioned. They also stole food from the mouths of hungry children, seniors, and veterans by gutting the nutritional assistance program in ways never before seen in American history. And all this was done so that they could provide their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks that they made permanent. And now the same group of people are coming to us and saying, well, we can't provide that same level of certainty and stability to working class Americans, to middle class Americans, and everyday Americans. And I just think that that's an unreasonable position. If you can actually do it for your billionaire donors, why should we treat everyday Americans any differently? Now, that said, we've consistently called for bipartisan negotiations. I'm back at the Capitol. We want to sit down and have a conversation with the other side of the aisle so we can reopen the government.
Jeffries,
but we need partners on We need partners on the other side.
So crystallize it for me, yeah. Linda Jeffries. I mean, when you say they won't sit down with you, I mean, how does that work exactly? How does it go? You're going up to Speaker Johnson. He's like, I don't want to talk to you. You're looking for others, and you're saying they're ignoring you. They're ignoring the minority leader in the House. I mean, when you say they won't sit down and talk to you, crystallize, paint a picture for us about how that looks and how that works in the nation's capital. How you can't get people to sit down when you're the Democratic leader of the House.
It's a good question. It makes no sense. It sounds illogical to people, and I understand that. So if we just break down the chronology, Lita Shuman and I demanded a meeting with Donald Trump. He agreed to the meeting. This was in advance of the shutdown. Mm-hmm. He agreed to the meeting. Then he canceled the meeting. And then the American people clearly rose up and said, what are you doing? You're not willing to sit down with leaders in the House and the Senate to try to avoid a government shutdown? So then he has the meeting. That was last Monday. Now, what have we seen from my Republican colleagues subsequent to that? Instead of actually having a follow-up conversation to try to avoid the government from shutting down, what Donald Trump did was release deep fake videos.
Yes.
To try to manipulate what was discussed in that meeting and lied to the American people. Then he went on the golf course. I think it was on day 4 of the government shutdown. We've never seen anything like this. We've never seen President Obama. We've never seen President Clinton, President Bush. I mean, come on. This guy is on the golf course?
I've seen Obama. I maybe not during a shutdown.
I didn't say during the shutdown, but
President Obama, he spent some time on the golf course now. Come on now. That's true.
Every president has.
Yes.
But not in the middle of a government shutdown.
That's correct.
Lastly, I will just say, I'm giving the chronology, which you appropriately asked for. Republicans canceled votes in the House last week. We were supposed to be in Washington voting. How do you cancel votes in advance of the government shutting down? We've never seen anything like this. And then they cancel votes again this week, which is why I say Republicans are on vacation, literally spread out throughout the country and the rest of the world. They need to get back to work so that we can resolve this issue related to reopening the government and addressing the Republican healthcare crisis.
Reopening the government, is it really simply about healthcare? Is the healthcare issue the prominent issue with the shutdown in your estimation?
Well, the healthcare issue definitely is a critical issue, in part because what we're dealing with right now is the expiration of the Affordable Care Act tax credits, which the Republicans initially said was a side issue. In fact, Mike Johnson said that in the White House meeting, I think he used a more fancier word. He said extraneous. I said, excuse me. This is not an extraneous issue. This is central to the well-being of the American people and their quality of life. And premiums, co-pays, and deductibles are about to skyrocket, and that's in front of us right now. Open enrollment starts in a matter of weeks. People are getting notices as we speak that their costs are doubling, tripling, or quadrupling. Now Republicans are finally starting to acknowledge, well, maybe this is a crisis that we better deal with right now. We've been saying that for weeks, It's a crisis that hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing across the country, including in rural America. And keep in mind, Stephen A lot of what's happening literally is happening in red states. This isn't a political issue for us.
I brought that up earlier, yeah.
Well, think the top 10 states, the top 10 states in terms of Affordable Care Act enrollees are all red states that Donald Trump won. We're fighting for Americans because it's the right thing to do.
If shutting down the government is due, obviously, to health care and all the subsidies, are you admitting that Obamacare may not have been the answer? Is that a fair question?
I think the Affordable Care Act has been a dramatic success, and the American people know it, which is why more than 70% of the American people want to see the Affordable Care Act tax credits extended. There's still more work to be done here in the country. And there's a variety of, you know, there's employer-based health insurance, and there's work to be done in that area. You know, there are things that can be done with respect to improving the efficiency of Medicare and Medicaid. That doesn't mean gutting Medicaid and ending it as we know it. And we're open to exploring anything that can be done in good faith. And the same is the case with respect to the Affordable Care Act. No one's perfect. Nothing is ever perfect. But we shouldn't be ripping healthcare away from tens of millions of Americans.
I looked at some numbers, Leader Jeffries, and this is a U.S. economic snapshot for the fall of 2025. It says GDP growth is at 3.8% increase. It says inflation is at 2.7%, moderating toward the Fed's 2% target. The unemployment rate is at 4.3%, still low, but creeping up slightly from early in the year. The federal funds rate is at 4 to 4.25%. All right, that's considered stable. I'm just looking at some of these things, and I'm saying when we consider the state of affairs that exist in this nation, people look at economics first. I don't care what anybody says. They think about economics and they think about safety. Some people will look at some of these numbers with Trump. The federal debt is at approximately $35 trillion, 122% of GDP, obviously. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, people are saying that's a relatively successful administration. How do you argue against that?
I think the American people view their economic circumstances through what they are paying for their day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month expenses.
Okay.
And that was the reality of the November 2024 election, where despite the fact that you had a lot of macroeconomic numbers, many of which you cited, that were relatively strong, but when the American people thought about their day-to-day lives in terms of what they're paying for, which is the case right now, what am I paying for gas? What am I paying for groceries? What am I paying for goods? What am I paying for housing? Why is my electricity bill skyrocketing? Why are these healthcare premiums out of control? I can't even afford to go to a doctor for myself, for my children, for my families. I certainly can't afford to purchase a new home, and that's the case for many young people all across the country. I'm barely struggling to pay rent. Donald Trump's core economic promise, remember, all of last year, he said, I'm going to lower costs on day one. He didn't have to say that. That's what he said. I'm a lower cost on day one. Costs aren't going down. They are going up. Inflation is on the way up. America's too expensive and the cost of living is too high. So my view is, look, the American people don't have to take my word for it. How do you feel about the economy? Is your life more affordable? Are you getting ahead? Can your children go further than you went? Which is always the American dream. The problem in the country right now is people are working hard, people are playing by the rules, but they can't afford to live a comfortable life. That's not a good economy, that's a bad economy.
Please address the claims made by Vice President J.D. Vance, House Speaker Johnson, and other Republicans that Democrats are pushing to provide health care benefits for undocumented immigrants. What's your direct response to that?
Yeah, that's a stone cold lie, and Republicans know it. Because federal law is very clear. Taxpayer dollars cannot be used for Medicare, for Medicaid, for the Affordable Care Act in terms of providing services to undocumented immigrants. Our fight is for hardworking American taxpayers, period, full stop. And here's why they know they're lying. We had that Oval Office meeting last Monday. It lasted for over an hour. This issue of undocumented immigrants getting health care, it came up for less than 10 seconds. And it was dismissed because they know it's a lie. It's a fake and phony issue. They didn't even bother litigating it in the Oval Office meeting. But they're trying to weaponize it, and the American people aren't buying it.
Last question.
Because we're not trying to change federal. We're not trying to change federal law. There's nothing that they can point to say, Stephen A., that we're trying to change federal law. This is about everyday Americans, working class Americans, and middle class Americans.
I'm interested in transitioning to this subject because I know you got to go, and I thank you for the time you've already gave me. You didn't have to give that, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Let me get to this, though, in regards to ICE. We know that Trump is, you know, sent the National Guard in Washington, D.C. It's federal, you know, federal jurisdiction. He could do that. Tried to send it in Portland. That got Nick sent it to L.A., Memphis, now Chicago. I want to know, number one, your thoughts about that. And number two, what role do you feel the hostile rhetoric
between both sides of the aisle has played in this kind of acrimony that I believe has now sifted into the streets of America, and what level of culpability the Democrats should bear along with the Republicans in your eyes?
Well, let me say that, one, political violence in any form, in any fashion, directed at anyone, regardless of your ideological views, is unacceptable in America, unacceptable. And we need Democrats and Republicans and independents, we need everyone to come together. And we can battle it out in terms of a contest of ideas. Things should never turn violent. That's not who we are as a country. That's not who we should become. And I think the responsibility falls on all of us to try to move the country forward, not turn back the clock, to try to bring people together as opposed to rhetoric that's sometimes used by people that tear us apart. In terms of unleashing U.S. troops in American towns and cities and counties, the American people aren't down with that. We need to support our local law enforcement in Chicago, in Portland, in New York City, in Washington, D.C., across the country. One of the problems, to tell you the truth, Stephen A., with the current partisan Republican spending bill is it actually cuts $500 million in grants to local law enforcement. One of the things we've said to our Republican colleagues is restore those grants. Like, why are they asking us to support their efforts to gut public safety efforts in the United States of America? And that's what we should be doing. Like, the cities and the states and the federal government should be partnering to lift up public safety for everyone, as opposed to, again, Donald Trump, my way or the highway, just unleashing troops on communities across the country in ways that the American people are understandably having an adverse reaction to.
I can talk to you all day, but I know you got to go. You got bigger things to deal with than talking to me. Obviously, I hope this shutdown gets resolved quick, fast, and in a hurry. I hope our streets are safe. I hope you guys can come together and find a resolution. But House Leader Hakeem Jeffries, I thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Once again, coming on to the show, you know you're welcome on anytime. I really appreciate it, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for what you do. Great to be with you.
Thank you. One and only Hakeem Jeffries, House Democratic Leader, right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with Stephen A. over at Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. 866-966-6887. 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call up. He said a few things. I got a few things to follow up with. I'm just getting started. He's finished, but I'm just getting started. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with your calls and more in a minute. 44 minutes past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with Stephen A., courtesy of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Thanks again to House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries for coming on the show with yours truly. Really, really appreciated his time. No matter how you feel, he said what he had to say. Listen, here's what we have to remember. That in 2020, every Democrat raised their hand during the 2020 debate. Illegals would be added to the healthcare system. Every one of them said that. I didn't forget that. And I read off these numbers to him because obviously economics, and it's interesting because I remember speaking to Governor Westmore of Maryland a few weeks ago. And when I brought up GDP growth, when I brought up inflation, the unemployment rate, the stock market Dow Jones Industrial Average, which right now is at 46,300. It's near record highs, up roughly 12 to 14% year to date, by the way. Federal funds rate at 4 to 4.25%, stable, expected to fall later in 2025, easing borrowing cost. Trade, current account deficit, $251 billion, quarter two for this year. Narrowing deficit, improving balance of payments. Consumer sentiment, inflation expectations at 3.4%. Mixed optimism tempered by price concerns, by the way. Wage growth at 3.9% year over year, outpacing inflation, boosting real incomes. Energy prices, oil at $81 a barrel, moderate and stable, no major inflation pressure from energy. And of course, the federal deficit, which we were popular for saying was at $37 trillion, has now been trimmed to $35 trillion. So when you read numbers like that, ladies and gentlemen, it sounds like Trump is doing his job. It sounds like Trump is doing his job.
And see, what we're not going to do is we're not going to be like pundits on the air, taking one side or another, refusing to highlight the positive, always focusing on a negative when it comes to a candidate we can't stand or a politician we can't stand. And then we reverse course when it's somebody that we like. OK, and all of a sudden we want to say everything positive about them, but nothing negative. I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. And when Hakeem Jeffries, the House Democratic leader, brings up how people are paying attention to their course, he's right about that. Because you don't want to hear numbers like this if you go to buy eggs and it's twice the price that it was, or milk or anything like that. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm saying that's how you live it. When you go to pump gas in your car, you don't want to look at oil being $81 a barrel and say, hey, we're in a good place. You don't give a damn about that. What you care about is the fact that it costs you damn near $5 a gallon in L.A., but you in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's at $2. That's what you care about. That's the kind of thing that makes you want to move. That's the kind of thing that makes you want to relocate. When we talk about, when we're looking at federal funds rate, that 4 to 4.25%, you know what? When you talk about stable, expected to fall later in 2025, ease in borrowing costs. You know why that matters? How much is an extra point to you? Because if you went and you bought a house and the rate is at 6.25%. And let's say for the sake of argument, your monthly mortgage costs you about $20,000. But then a year later, the rate drops to 5.25%. Well, that might drop you down to 15. That matters. But people might not look at it. They're not going to look at these overall numbers. So I think Hakeem Jeffries makes a good point in that regard. But it doesn't make the Democrats innocent. And where I was going to go to him, the Jasmine Crocketts of the world, the AOCs. Let me tell you something right now. And I'm not calling her out because I don't like her or anything like that. I think Jasmine Crockett is an intelligent, accomplished woman who's a representative in the nation's capital. I think AOC is going to decide to run for the Senate seat in New York City. And I think that's why Chuck Schumer is holding down the fort and going along with the rest of the Democrats in support of this shutdown, because he knows that he went against them last time, kept the government opened, alienated the other progressives, or the progressives rather, on the left, infuriated them against him, which put AOC in a position to challenge him for a seat because he's been a career politician. We ain't blind. Again, we were born at night, not last night. We could see it. We could see it as clear as day. So when we look at issues like that, it matters. It's pertinent. It's relevant. But I bring all of that up when I point to a Jasmine Crockett is because here's what I know. All I ever hear her doing is going off about Trump. Ladies and gentlemen, can I tell you what my belief is? I have no desire to be a politician. Let me reiterate that. And I appreciate House Leader, Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries speaking to me in the way that he did by saying that I speak with the frustration of the American people, because you damn right I do. Let me tell you what gets me annoyed. And I hope Jasmine Crockett is listening to this. By the way, she's welcome on the show. When you go on national television and you calling the president of the United States out of his name, and you're being all disrespectful, as a representative in this country, do you believe the citizens of Texas sent you there to do that? They don't like him either. I'm talking about those who voted for her in all likelihood. But because he is who he is and he is in that position, they expect you to go to Capitol Hill and figure out a way to maneuver yourself through that terrain to work in a fashion that's going to facilitate getting things done on behalf of your constituents. That's your job. That's your job. Excuse my language on Sirius XM, but it ain't your job to say he ain't shit. He ain't worth a damn. That's not your job. Anybody can do that. You're supposed to be figuring out a way to get things done. And when it comes to this president, that egotistical, maniacal tendencies that he has, everything is about Trump, where every cabinet member and everybody and their grandmama got a fawn all over him before they speak. I mean, these people, before they say hello, they say, I just want to say we have a great president. He's such a great leader. I love him so much. He's so wonderful. He's so marvelous. He's the leader we need. I mean, they do this every day because it's damn near a requirement when it comes to him. And I understand it. I can't stand it, but I see it. But the flip side to it is that he's a deal maker. And if you figure out a way to make him look good in any way, quid pro quo is something he lives by. He'll reciprocate. If you know that, why you can't figure it out? Is that hard? 866-967-6887. That's 866-96 POTUS. You're listening live, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Hour number two is almost upon us. Your calls for at least an hour. Can't wait to talk to you. Don't go away. Be back in a minute. 54 minutes past hour number one. Back here on the Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Courtesy of SiriusXM. POTUS Radio, channel 124. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. By the way, there's two options that AOC has. One is Schumer's Senate seat, or the other is control of the House. So whether it's Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries, AOC has two targets. I don't ever think she'd win an election. Too progressive, too left. I don't think most of the country would vote for her. But the House seat, leader of the House, or the Senate seat of Schumer? Oh, yeah. I could see her going for that. Brenna in South Carolina, you're live with Stephen A. Hey, hey.
Hello.
Hello, Brenna. How are you? You got a couple of minutes. You're on the show with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I am good.
Go ahead. You're live on the air, Brenna.
I was calling in. Go ahead. So I am a former military spouse. My husband retired. He also works for the VA, and I also work for the child care facilities on post.
Okay.
And we're government employees, and we're still working with possible back pay, which it hasn't been confirmed or not.
Possible. And Senator Thune and others all say that federal workers will get back pay. They say that the likelihood that's not going to happen, that way you're not going to lose back pay. That's what they say. But you also said you're still working, so I get you. But go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now, you know, we're working without getting paid, but, you know, eventually we're supposed to get paid.
How much faith do you have? Let me ask you this, Brenna, real quick, because we're running out of time. Who do you hold most accountable?
Yeah.
Who do you hold most accountable for this shutdown, the Dems or the Republicans?
The Democrats.
Because?
I mean, we needed, 60 votes?
Yeah.
And okay. 53 all. So we needed 7 Democrats to keep it open.
Okay.
Like, y'all figure out your lives, but how are they still getting paid? And we got to figure out our lives until they figure
well,
it out.
Well, you know
that's
what?
That's not fair.
Brenna, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. You make a very, very valid point. The politicians on Capitol Hill that have shut down our government, preventing federal workers from getting paid, some while still working, by the way. Those figures are still getting paid. You want to get a resolution to something like this in the future? Too late to do it now. But we need to insist as American citizens that if federal workers don't get paid because of a government shutdown, y'all don't get paid. Y'all don't get paid. Talk about providing an incentive to making sure that you do what the hell you supposed to do to prevent a shutdown and that you come together to work out. If none of y'all get paid, just like those federal workers that are American citizens are not getting paid, perhaps that's the incentive you need to sit down and get it done. Straight Shooter in the house with Stephen A. Up next, I'll get to your phone calls. I also got something, an atrocity that came out of the mouth of Speaker Mike Johnson. Y'all can't miss this. I mean, this man should be drug tested. I'll explain. Hour number two up next. Welcome to hour number two of Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Stephen A. Smith, coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS, to simplify it for you. Speaker Mike Johnson, you would think that if I'm sitting here today and I say something as incendiary, even though I did not mean it that way, as the speaker needing to be drug tested, that's going to raise eyebrows. I assure you that when I finish explaining to you why I said it, you'll probably agree with me. I mean, a urine sample, a drug test, blood test, whatever the case, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, somebody should test him immediately. Now, why would I say that? You would think it's politics. You would think it's something involving the shutdown. You would think it's the ICE raids. Excuse me. You would think it's the National Guards being in cities. That is not why I am speaking about House Speaker Mike Johnson, who, by the way, is welcomed on this show as well. Y'all are. I'm speaking about Speaker Mike Johnson because what came out of his mouth was one of the insanely most idiotic things I've ever heard come out the mouth of a grown adult in such a responsible position. Usually when folks don't have their facts straight, it's because they're lying on purpose or they're omitting stuff because they're trying to spin for their own purposes. This was not that. This was flat out ignorance. And what could I possibly be talking about, ladies and gentlemen, that involves the Speaker of the House displaying his ignorance in what will amount to be a global stage? Here's what I'm talking about. Speaker Mike Johnson talking about Bad Bunny, the choice by Roc Nation to perform during halftime of this NFL season Super Bowl. Listen to what Speaker Mike Johnson had to say, please. Take it away.
Any reaction to Bad Bunny being chosen as the Super Bowl halftime performance?
I didn't even know who Bad Bunny was, okay. But it sounds like a terrible decision, in my view, from what I'm hearing. What's that?
How come?
Well, it sounds like he's not someone who appeals to a broader audience. And I think, you know, there's so many eyes on the Super Bowl, a lot of young, impressionable children. And I think, you know, in my view, you would have Lee Greenwood or role models doing that, not somebody like this.
Did y'all hear what he said? Young, impressionable children. The Super Bowl has such reach that these young, impressionable children who gravitate to the NFL, to Super Bowl weekend, they need a role model that they can relate to. And so Speaker Johnson's choice was Lee Greenwood, an artist from the 80s, who's 83 years old. 83, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, while Speaker Johnson was saying that, which just made me choke and laugh and everything else in between, because you talk about a man that's detached. Now, clearly he can get away with it because when you're the Speaker of the House, you got a lot of responsibilities, and clearly he is working. And I totally believe him when he says he didn't know who Bad Bunny was and all this other stuff. But Lee Greenwood, Speaker Johnson, you might have more recognition than Lee Greenwood. You got to be kidding me. Ladies and gentlemen, Spotify monthly listeners, Lee Greenwood is at 447,789. Bad Bunny is at 79,814,480. To 447,000. YouTube subscribers, Lee Greenwood is at 108,000. Ladies and gentlemen, I got 1.3 million. I have 1.3 million subscribers. I'm 13 times more popular than Lee Greenwood, according to YouTube numbers. Bad Bunny is at 51 million. What are you talking about? He's Puerto Rican. He speaks English, but he always sings in Spanish. Could it be a little xenophobia going on? I don't want to accuse the speaker of that. But clearly, it's some flagrant ignorance being disseminated to the masses. My God, how off can you be? This man is one of the top three artists in all of Spotify, one of the top three artists globally in the world. And your response, your contrarian point of view, your perspective, the alternative to him, is Lee Greenwood? I mean, my Lord, what are you doing? I'm bringing stuff like that up because what kind of attachment to reality do you have to say something like that? And then, of course, that brings up my ultimate point, how Trump, because Bad Bunny has been critical of him in the past because he didn't like Trump's verbiage and his treatment towards Puerto Rico, which is where he's native, you know, that's his native land. So you got all of that going on. And Trump was like, I don't know this guy. Yeah, you did. You know everybody who insults you. Stop lying, Mr. President. Stop lying. And so now we're going to talk about it's the Super Bowl and it's the ICE raids. And you know what? We're going to have ICE officials, ICE officers there invading the Super Bowl. You know it ain't just about Bad Bunny. You know you're still salty because the owners wouldn't let you in as to become an NFL owner. You know what that's about. But see, this is the problem. And even Republicans can't argue with me about this. If you look at the numbers, because when we're looking at things from a federal perspective, we have to pay attention to the analytics. We have to pay attention to the analytical data. We can't just go, even though Hakeem Jeffries makes a valid point, we can't just go on the personal experiences. You got over 350 million American citizens here. These numbers matter. You look at GDP, you look at inflation, you look at the unemployment rate, you look at the stock market, you look at federal funds rate, you look at trade and current account deficits, you look at consumer sentiment, inflation expectations, wage growth, energy prices, federal debt. Trump seems to be doing a damn good job. But then he mucks it all up because of nonsense like this. So you, the Super Bowl is an event. The Super Bowl is like religion to people. Everybody clamors to the Super Bowl. And you're going to mess with our Super Bowl Sunday because you don't like Bad Bunny or you don't like a few NFL owners. That's what you're going to do. This is the pettiness that I'm talking about. This is why I did not vote for Donald Trump. See, when I talked about voting for Kamala Harris, I wasn't excited about her. And as far as I'm concerned, she didn't earn it because she didn't go through a primary. And the Democrats talking about a threat to democracy, shut the hell up. I don't want to hear that because you didn't care about that when you circumvented the democratic process to make sure that the vice president, the former vice president, would be able to bypass the democratic primary and go straight to the democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States. You could have got Joe Biden out earlier, but you didn't do it because you wanted her there. Because it was her turn. In 2016, when Hillary had competition, Hillary Rodham Clinton, oh, it was her turn. When Biden was getting smoked in the primaries before Representative Clyburn came and saved the day, it was his turn. That's my problem with the Democrats. That's my problem with them. It's always somebody's turn. The one thing I will give respect and appreciation to, conservatives everywhere, it came to Trump. They say you could kiss my you-know-what. I don't care about DeSantis. I don't care about Nikki Haley. I don't care about Ramaswamy. I don't care about Christie. I don't care about, it was back in the day, Rubio or Carla Fiorina. On this particular go-round, I said DeSantis. I said Ramaswamy. I said Nikki Haley and all of them. The Republicans, the conservatives said, damn that. Ain't nobody's turn. We decide who's going to represent us, not you. The Democrats don't do that. And that's one of the reasons we're in this predicament that we're in right now. Because you handed Trump the election. You should have beat him. You handed it to him on a silver platter. Open borders, identity politics, culture wars and all of this stuff. While this man was talking about gas prices kind of high, eggs kind of costly, so is milk. Oh, by the way, your streets ain't safe. Oh, by the way, where's she at? I'm showing up everywhere for interviews and to debate. Where's she at? That's why you lost the election. I voted for her because I felt that if you were Republicans in the House and the Senate and you had enough power, you would be able to force some level of compromise and capitulation, whereas he doubles down on everything. I didn't vote for her because of her. I voted for her because I thought the government would work better, because everybody would be actively involved and having to work on behalf of all the American citizens with the understanding you don't get to get everything you want. You have to compromise. But the president is in there now with the bully pulpit and not only got the Republicans doing his every bidding, I'm talking about petrified to do otherwise. They have done everything but get on their knees and literally kiss his feet, if not give him a pedicure. It's embarrassing. Oh, our great president, he's such a great leader. He's such a wonderful person. I'm shocked they didn't talk about his golf game. I'm shocked they didn't look at Donald Trump and tell him he's skinny. They'll say anything to make him pleased. It's pathetic. But the Democrats brought this on themselves, and they brought it on us. They're not the only ones, GOP too, but they brought this on us because you forgot about the economy and addressing that with fervor. You forgot about safety in the streets and addressing that with fervor. You forgot that even Obama deported more people than Trump. You forgot that whether it was Obama, whether it was Nancy Pelosi, whether it was Senator Schumer and a host of other Democrats, all of y'all spoke against illegal immigration. All of yous. This is why I say people make me sick. This is hard to take. It really, really is. And then Speaker Johnson coming out now. It's Super Bowl Sunday. What's the right one since when you care about Super Bowl Sunday? Why? Because he sings in Spanish? We got a whole bunch of people in there. Hell, hey, I know a lot of people in Miami. I got a home down there in the area. English is second language. And I don't mind. Don't bother me. I love my Hispanic brothers and sisters. Love them to death. I'm mad I don't speak better Spanish. You sitting there walking around acting like it's a damn shame. No. They're great for this country. If all of us could come together and understand the importance of compromise, it's great for this country. Make me sick. Bad Bunny is a great selection by Roc Nation for Super Bowl Sunday. I don't mind at all. The NFL is trying to globalize its brand. That's what the NFL is trying to do. That's why they played games in Berlin. That's why they were in Ireland just a week ago. That's why they've been in France. That's why they're going to London. That's why they've been in Germany, because they see soccer and how big that's gotten. What if they globalize their brand? Because it's all about the money, right? The owners want more. How do you get more? You can get, but only so much from the American citizen. You got to go worldwide. The NBA has done it. Soccer has done it. Baseball's doing it. You know, Shohei Ohtani is the best player on the planet. This dude might be the best since Babe Ruth. Where you from? But we got Speaker Johnson spewing such ignorance. Come on, man. Come on now. You don't know, don't comment. Or at least ask the question. Don't act like you know. I don't know what you know, but I don't act like I know. To the phones we go. Chris, Virginia, you're live with Stephen A. Talk to me.
Yes, sir. I was just wondering where you got your numbers from, because the numbers that I'm looking up and the numbers that I'm seeing as far as the actual debt, in which it did increase probably about 2 months ago to $38 trillion. And now it is at just below $38 trillion, at $37.8 trillion.
I thought it was at 37. I thought it was at 37. And then I got some numbers from researchers today that said it's over $35 trillion, equaling 122% of GDP. Persistent long-term fiscal rate, risk rather. That's what it says.
That's the That's a big negative. It's at $37.8 trillion. You're growing at about $6 billion, $6 billion,
okay.
I think, a month or so. That's,
okay.
That's a negative. Oil is at $64 a barrel, not 87. And with the fact of the Saudis or OPEC increasing production.
Okay, so let me ask you. So is that your point, to call up here and correct me? Because I don't mind being corrected. But what I do is this. I'm going to go to my researchers and I'm going to get the numbers. If you're wrong, and I do I have a number, I'm going to call you back? Or you want to make another point? Yeah, no, I don't mind.
I'm just saying. You gave Leader Johnson some numbers, and he corrected you, because I don't know if somebody's giving you the wrong information. But I'm just saying, the numbers that you're giving are not correct. The oil is not $87 a barrel, and the Saudis, with the production that is going on,
I mentioned
on
nothing
right
about
now,
the Saudis. I mentioned nothing about the Saudis. I never brought it up. I got your point. I'll correct myself once I look up to see if you're right or not. Do you have another point to make?
Another point to make is that you said something to the degree about Schumer talking about the actual shutdown, and he was against that type of thing, but you didn't get your researchers to pull up Donald Trump saying the exact same thing.
That's not the point. Hold on. Whoa. Don't play that with me. I'll bring up what the hell I want to bring up. The fact of the matter is that Schumer did say that. The fact that I didn't bring up that, I have a 2-hour show. It's not a 10-hour show. I got papers here with full of sound from 18 different officials. I didn't play them either. It ain't your job to critique the show like that. You ain't a damn producer. Don't try that with me. The fact of the matter is that Schumer did say that. I didn't say that Trump didn't say it. I know there's a whole bunch of Trump stuff that Trump says. I've called Trump to the carpet for a bunch of stuff that it said, and I still ain't get to all of it, and I never will. That's a radio show. The one thing nobody's going to do is call up here and produce my show for me. That's going to be me. Have a nice day. That I don't play. But I don't mind correcting myself, and I'm going to have my producers double-check those numbers. That's what you're trying to do? You're trying to sit up there and talk to me about, oh, my goodness, I might not have this right? What you think that's going to do? Quell me? It's going to quiet me? It's going to get me to be timid about my position? Ain't happening. The overall point is the overall point. Whether it's $35 or $37 trillion, the price of oil, you're literally talking about the barrel of oil. It's not $81. It's something else. What the hell are you going to talk about next? The color of Hakeem Jeffries' drawers? I got that wrong, too? I'm telling you, I don't know what y'all accustomed to listening to on POTUS Radio. I will tell somebody to kiss off in a heartbeat. I'm not the one. The overall point is the overall point. I played the sound of Chuck Schumer. I was right about that. Oh, but you didn't play the sound about Trump. It's a 2-hour show. Can't play sound from anybody. It touched on my ultimate point. That's all that matters.
Yeah,
Joe, goodbye. Have a nice life. Joe, in Ohio, you're live with Stephen A. What's up?
Hey, Stephen A., thanks for doing this. I think this is long overdue, a show like this. I'll get to my point pretty quickly. You know, I'm tired of it. You've mentioned it before. The right calling the left wrong on everything. The left calling the right wrong on everything. They're more concerned with popularity contests and gotcha moments on the floor when they're arguing stuff. So where do we go, Stephen? How do we get to a...
You got to have somebody in position that ain't playing games. Like, for example, if Trump was the way that he is with everyone, not just opposing views to whatever he wants to spew, then that would be different. If you got on people, like, for example, you're the president of the United States, and I understand you're on the GOP side, but a shutdown affects hundreds of thousands of Americans. It ain't about sides right now. It's about making sure American citizens don't suffer, because you promised to be an American president. You promised to be the president of the United States of America to all, not just to those who support you. And so you've got to be even-handed. That's one of the things that the media got in trouble with, if I'm being totally honest with you, Joe. The big problem wasn't that they insulted Trump. It's that that's all they did. When you're supposed to be calling out everybody. And when you call out everybody and you're fair-minded, that's what it's about. Plain and simple. And that's how we get to that, Joe. Just like we've just brought up, Joe, we just finished talking about how there's federal workers still working, but they're not getting paid. Well, why are representatives and senators getting paid? If nobody gets paid, nobody gets paid, right? Ain't that the way it should be?
I agree.
That's what I'm saying. When you operate like that, when you're a fair-minded individual, when you're willing to face scrutiny and say, you know what, you have a good point. You have a good point. Okay, I'll address it. Just like that caller just called up here. I mean, he was clearly calling to troll me. That's fine, but he doesn't understand. I have control of the mic waves. You'll talk when I want you to talk on my show. But the point is that I'm going to double check his numbers. And if he's right and I'm wrong, I'm going to say so. It's not the end of the world. A matter of fact, it only edifies me and makes me better. Period. We need to get to that point, Joe. That's what's going to save America right now. It's not about good versus evil with everybody pointing out who the evil side is. It's about recognizing that there's good in all of us. Let's tap into that for the betterment of this country. That's what the mission is. And we don't see enough people aiming towards that. That's a problem. That's a problem. 866-967-6887 is the number to call. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more of your calls in a minute. Hour 2, back here on the Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Number to call is always 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Still looking it up. That caller might be right. Federal deficit showing at $37.8 trillion. Talk about oil barrels, not at 81. It's more like 62. So I don't mind being corrected. That's what I'm here for. No doubt about it. Let's get back to the calls at 866-967-6887. You don't get to be an ass, though. That you don't get to be, not on this show. Only person that belongs to gets to do that is me. Let's get back to the calls. Let's go to Paul in Georgia. You're live with Stephen A. What's going on, Paul?
Hey, Stephen A. Congratulations on being on POTUS.
Thank you.
I live in Rome, Georgia, and I am in the district with Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, Marjorie Taylor Greene suggested that the Democrats go live together in one place, and that was after Charlie Kirk got shot, and that the Republicans go live somewhere else.
I don't like that.
And she said, I didn't like it either. She said that all the Democrats want to do is kill us, and I was sitting there thinking to myself that this is a lady like that fine representative from Texas that you were talking about a while ago, that is someone that is not able to become transactional with her fellow workers at the Capitol and right. screams and yells for media attention. And, you know, there's so many hypocritical things that she's done that bother me that I don't know if it's appropriate for me to even start digging into it on the radio.
Well, let me say this to you. You don't have to do that. What I would tell you, and I appreciate the call, that, you know, listen, I thought that was a very irresponsible statement to be made by an elected representative in our country. You know, that's not what our country is about. Our country is a mosaic. And we work with one another. We compromise with one another. We're sensitive to others' needs, wants, desires, etc. And we do what we can to be a gorgeous mosaic and to help this country remain the greatest in the world. People from all over the world want to come to America. Why? Because it's the land of opportunity. That's not just a financial thing. It's also building cultures, cultivating with one another. I'm a black man from the streets of New York City. Do you know how I would feel about white folks if I never got out of Hollis? If I stayed in a black neighborhood and I never got to see other parts of this world, do you realize how ignorant I would be to how decent people of all race, color, creeds, ethnicities, etc. are? The exposure to one another is what assists and contributes to making us better. Because you get to see a different perspective and get educated about a perspective that doesn't belong to just you. Somebody else's perspective may be better, may be wiser, may be more intellectual, may be more edifying, may be more simplistic and reasonable. You never know. That's what contributes to making the world a better place.
And that's what a lot of people need to focus on. Steve in Chicago, you're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, Steve. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Stephen A?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for calling.
Greenwood is, I'm good to be here. You don't think Lee Greenwood is a happening artist in 2025? You don't think, you know what? Here's the deal, all right? They're trying to culturally pave over music like that. They're trying to culturally pave over hip hop and Hispanic music and anything outside of
Who's trying to culturally pave over?
Like, I would say like the Christian right, the Christian far right right now, people like Mike Johnson, the perspective that he comes from. But what I really want to ask you, you know, I live in Chicago right now and everyone's talking about, you know, the Jews could come in here and blah, blah, blah. How do you feel about the whole J.B. Pritzker and Brandon Johnson verse?
Let me say this about Governor Pritzker in Illinois and Mayor Johnson in Chicago. I think Mayor Johnson has a boatload of problems. I don't think he's going to remain in office long because I think when you look at his issues with education in the city of Chicago and funding when it comes to that, I just think that you see the lack of support he has, and I don't think he's long for that job. I don't know much about the report card that he gets in Chicago and whether it's deserving or not. I'm not qualified to speak on that. I just know this when I'm talking about Chicago. As a black man, I am sick and tired of hearing about blacks killing blacks all over the streets of Chicago. It's been going on for years. It was going on when Obama was in office, before he was in office. It was going on when he was a junior senator. It's been going on to this day. And whether it's Rahm Emanuel there, whether it's Pritzker, whether it's Mayor Johnson or whomever, little to nothing, in my estimation, has been done about it, perception-wise. Now, they could come to me with the data, and they could say from a numbers perspective that it has changed. And I understand that. I truly, truly do. The flip side to it, however, is you don't get to tell me when I'm putting up economic snapshots to ignore the numbers and pay attention to what's happening to everyday Americans. But then when it comes to violence in the streets, pay attention to the data. Violence in Chicago has been going on for entirely too long. Now, do I think that Trump should circumvent the governor and send in the National Guards? No. What I do believe, however, is that the governor of Illinois should ask for federal assistance. Because I've seen black people in the streets of Chicago asking for federal intervention because that's how crazy things have been. And I think that being a reality is something that we can't ignore. I have to go, Steve. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much because we have breaking news. A Gaza peace deal. That is a subject that we need to touch on. President Trump just issued this statement over his Truth Social platform. I am very proud to announce that Israel and Hamas have both signed off on the first phase of our peace plan. This means that all of the hostages will be released very soon, and Israel will withdraw their troops to an agreed upon line as the first steps towards a strong, durable, and everlasting peace. All parties will be treated fairly. This is a great day for the Arab and the Muslim world, Israel, all surrounding nations, and the United States of America. And we thank the mediators from Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey who worked with us to make this historic and unprecedented event happen. Blessed are the peacemakers. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. So the first phase of a peace deal has gone into effect. Obviously, that's progress. It's not over till it's over. But obviously that's big news. And so we had an obligation to come to you with it and to make sure that is the situation, plain and simple. Let's go back to the phones at 866-967-6887. Let's go to Bob in Syracuse. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me.
Hey, Stephen A. How are you?
How you doing?
I don't know what world many people are living in, okay? But my little world that I live in says that we're pretty good at America.
Mm-hmm.
I just came back from Las Vegas. Planes were packed. Went to the Wynn. People were playing $300 a hand blackjack. They're spending $700-$800 to be in a room. You go out and you see the kids in school. They got $1,400 iPhones. People are driving nice cars. I just don't understand why people just don't sit there and take a chill pill and say, we're doing pretty good in America.
Well, let me tell you why. Because when you're living in the streets of America and you're going through some of the things American citizens go through, your personal experiences is what permeates profoundly. There's no way around that. And so you have to take it into consideration. There's a lot of people, maybe you're not affluent, maybe you're not rich or wealthy, or maybe you're a middle-class individual that can afford to pay your bills, but you're not any of those categories. But you're not wondering where your next meal's coming from. You're not wondering whether you're going to have a roof over your head. You're not some kid living in the streets of America, whether it be the projects or some poor, depraved, impoverished neighborhood, and you're scared whether or not you're going to be able to make it home day to day. You got folks joining gangs and things of that nature because that's the only way for them to play it, to be safe. You have young individuals, impressionable individuals that commit crimes and cause mayhem and stuff like that because that's a rite of passage. If you want to survive in the habitat that you dwell in. And when the police come, when law enforcement officials come looking for you, when society as a whole is judging you, they don't take those things into consideration. All they see is what you were guilty of, what you allowed yourself in their eyes to be associated with. And it stops there. Everybody doesn't have a wonderful father or a wonderful mother or a roof over their head and clothes on their back and food on the table every single day. And they know this, the least of their concerns is getting fed and surviving. There are some people in our country that hard and harsh times come that way. And you got to be sensitive to all of that and recognize the fact that you don't know what somebody else's situation is. When you think about mental health and how big of an issue that has become, why has it become an issue? Because you have people walking around. You got a lot of depressed people in this country, psychologically depressed, just out of it, feeling hopeless, devoid of hope, rife with despair, wondering whether or not they're going to survive, and in some cases, whether or not they even want to. And when you know that that's a reality, you can't just sit there overall and say, oh, you know, it's a great place. It's not great to them. Now, when you compare it to some of the places that exist in this world, when you see footages of folks in Gaza and little kids starving and you see the rubble and you're wondering how in God's name could they live under these conditions? How on earth are they surviving, et cetera, et cetera? When you do something like that, when you go through, when you see something like that, okay, you're like, yeah, all right, that's not America. But you got some people that never see that. I remember one time I've been working on ESPN for over 20 years. A young kid came up to me and asked me, who was I? And everybody looked at him and they said, yeah, man, you don't know that guy. That's Stephen A. Smith from ESPN. The kid looked at me and said, what's ESPN? He had no idea that it was a network because he never had a TV. That's the kind of stuff that you got to think about sometimes. It's real easy to forget when you're going through the daily grind of life, but sometimes you got to remember that. You just do. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Props to the President of the United States for getting one phase done involving a peace deal with Hamas and Israel. It's a big, big deal. And, of course, you're going to have people clamoring for him to get the Nobel Peace Prize because he's been clamoring to get the Nobel Peace Prize because he wanted, in some people's eyes, because, you know, he wants to make sure that he usurps President Obama at every turn. I'm not getting into all of that. I don't care. What I care about is peace and prosperity, as much of it as we can get as human beings. That's what we want. And President Trump seems to be delivering to some degree on that promise and that pledge. Props to him. Got to give it to him when he deserves it. Plain and simple. Back with your calls to close out the show in a minute. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Hour 2 back here on the Stephen A. Smith Show. Or Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Courtesy of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. 866-967-6887 is the number. Call us 866-96-POTUS. That's 8 different wars that President Trump has helped to quell. They say that he's committed, he's received pledges of over $15 trillion when it comes to manufacturing, semiconductors, companies, etc., which could mean more jobs, more stuff for the economy. Got to pay attention to this. Can't ignore this. Just can't. I mean, that's the problem when it comes to covering politics in this day and age, because so many people are hating on Trump. You can't say when he's doing something good. That will not happen on this show. I do not like what he's doing with the National Guard. I do not like that he's usurping the authority of governors who are the commanders in chief of their respective states. He has no right to do that. He does have a right to do it in the nation's capital, in Washington, D.C. That's not a city. It's not a state. It's not a city under state jurisdiction. And I understand that people are saying, but what about the streets? What about the streets of Chicago? What about the enormous murders that have taken place? Blah, blah, blah. That's Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson's problem. And it's for them to ask for federal assistance. And it's for the people to demand that they receive the federal assistance that they need if it comes to that, compelling them to ask the president. It's not for the president to invoke whatever privilege he thinks he has. This is not an authority. He's not an authoritarian figure. It comes across as he's trying to be from time to time. No, this is the America. This is a republic. You don't get to do that. You don't get to do that. But the other stuff that he's doing economically, the border, these wars, he's not doing a bad job, y'all. He's not. Just got to be honest about it. Eddie and Callie, you're live with Stephen A. Talk to me.
Couple of things. Your comment about the Speaker Johnson, and going back to sometimes some 80-year-old guy to do entertainment, let's be grateful. At least he stayed in the 20th century. The 19th century, like these guys tend to do. Let's take things way back.
Right.
So be grateful for that. Couple of things, though. I mean, two things. One, we can't talk about Trump's economic policies being successful yet, because these deals that you talk about aren't really deals.
That's
yet.
Fair. And that's fair. I brought that. Hold on. I brought that up on plenty of occasions, Eddie. And you're right. What I'm saying, however, is this: in previous administrations, we definitively lamented what other people were doing in real time. We can't do that with him right now. The prism of history will tell us how effective and how successful his presidency was. In the future, we'll learn that. But in real time right now, they painted a picture that disaster was striking this country if he were in office. And while there's an abundance of things I do not like, I don't like him scaling back Black history or access to Black history. I don't like him coming across as authoritarian and trying to impose his will and violating the Constitution by sending National Guards in the cities and stuff like that. I don't like that stuff from him at all. But there's some good he's doing, and we can't ignore that. We have to be fair. That's all I'm saying, Eddie. And I think fair is that, yeah, we'll wait and see if it's really, really true and real. But right now, it doesn't look bad in that regard. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
Okay.
The last point I would make is about some of the changes that we talk about making in America, taking us backwards.
Yeah.
And it truly is backwards. Mm-hmm. Some of the things you just mentioned, but in every administration, we find some good, we find some bad. And yeah, history is going to weigh us.
I didn't find much good in the Biden administration. I didn't find much good in the Biden administration. I ain't gonna lie to you. I mean, I did a couple of things. I didn't like him announcing that he was going to select a black Supreme Court justice, but I love the fact that he actually did it in Ketanji Brown Jackson. And I love that. But you know, I didn't like open borders. I didn't like the spending. I didn't like the lack of safety I felt in the streets of America. I didn't like a lot of things under the Biden administration, if I'm being totally honest.
I've been around long enough to have experienced a lot of presidents, and you know, a lot of people didn't like Jimmy Carter, but he accomplished some good things.
He was a good man.
I've been around long enough to see 20% interest rates, and I had to run a business. I've been around through Reagan and Clinton, and while they may have been good years, they were up and down.
I got you. Eddie, I got to run because I got other callers to get to. I appreciate the call, though. Thank you so much, and feel free to call back next week. Alyssa, Michigan, you're live with Stephen A. Go ahead, Alyssa. How are you?
Hey, thank you. I just was turning channels. I've never listened to you before. You kind of scared me at first when you started ranting against somebody's opinion. And what I wanted to say was the reason about a CR. But before I do, I just want to respond real quickly to two things that you said. As a retired female white financial analyst, that when I graduated from college, that was a male-dominated world. Mm-hmm. And the Representative Crockett's comments about Trump, Crockett is a nobody. The president of the United States, a world leader, went after her with sexist, horrible comments about her nails and her eyelashes.
Alyssa, he's petty and he's trifling in that regard. He has to stop that. He really, really needs to grow up, but he's not going to. He's almost 80 and he is what he is. But I tell you this much. The Republicans could go a long way by showing they've got a spine and not fawning over him so much, okaying every little thing that he says and does. You know, you can sit up there and say, listen, policy-wise, I'll vote with the president, but I really wish he acted like an adult. You can say that. It's not a crime. What are you scared he's going to do to you? That's the kind of stuff that bothers me about the people that we have on Capitol Hill. Just as much as it bothers me that Jasmine Crockett speaks the way that she speaks, because I think it's counterproductive to her constituents who she represents. That's my personal opinion.
Right. My other real quick comment of what you said is, yes, the economy is doing really good right now under Trump. I want to point out, though, the Dow was 46,000 under Biden's administration. The GDP was higher last year at this time. We had 30,000 jobs in August and 50,000 in September. That's an estimate because he fired the guy that does it and the government shut down. But under Biden, there were like 150,000 jobs a month. So like somebody else said, yeah, you can't slam them because things are doing good right now. But the same thing happened to Biden. People didn't care that the Dow was 46,000. They thought their eggs were too high. It's a continuing.
I need you to hurry up, Alyssa, because I got to get to other calls before I get on out of here because I'm running out of time. But go ahead.
So this will be the fifth in the row of a continual resolution. Republicans need to get back. We need an actual budget. You sit down, you negotiate it. We haven't had years a budget.
Without question. Alyssa, I got to go. Thank you so much for the call. Sean in Missouri, you're live with Stephen A. Go ahead.
Hey, Stephen A. I'm a huge fan. Go Missouri Tigers. I did have a question about Bad Bunny, but now that Trump just made this deal, I have one simple question. Is President Trump's Gaza peace deal a championship win for his legacy, and does it outweigh his other works?
It could potentially be if it lasts. I just don't know how much faith we should have that anything involving Israel and Palestine, or Israel and specifically Hamas, will last. But he does have support in the Middle East. There is no doubt about that. That's a way to go. You kind of wonder at what price, what did it take for him to get that kind of support? How much, if at all, was America compromised along the way in order for him to receive that support? I think those things are legitimate questions. But in the end, what it still comes down to is the fact that we can't knock what appears to be an obvious situation when it comes to Donald Trump in terms of what he has done, what he has pulled off in order for this peace deal to take place. And listen, when it comes, I rarely speak on this issue because I'm not knowledgeable enough to speak on this issue. And it's a highly sensitive thing. You're a member of the Jewish community. I think there's two factions that people have to pay attention to. You've had a lot of people, they've thrown out words like genocide and stuff like that because of the continual bombing and stuff like that. You see the rubble, the living conditions that people are under. You see kids in the streets starving for food, water, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and some would argue that's contributed to anti-Semitism. What I would say is that I see a difference between people who have pointed the finger at the Jewish community and people who have pointed the finger at Netanyahu. A lot, you got a lot of Jewish folks that have spoken against Netanyahu. So again, not all Jewish folks agree with Netanyahu. Now the Mark Levins of the world and various others do. And they'll point to, you know, the absence of factual reporting in terms of, you know, letting workers in, you know, assistance, et cetera, whether it's the Red Cross or anybody else. And they'll talk about how you're letting food in, you're not trying to starve the people, you're trying to do more for them, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have people on the other side that says, excuse me, you know, we're entitled to a Palestinian state. You know, this is look at what he's doing, et cetera, et cetera. But they point to him instead of the Jewish community. In America, we support Israel. And when you look at the Jewish community, there's a lot of people that look at it and they say, hey, you know what? They didn't deserve to have people invade them on October 7th. And over 1,000 folks get kidnapped and, you know, hundreds were killed and all. They didn't deserve that. And then you have others that are of the mindset. This is what happens when you got the kind of warfare that they have going on. So you're almost scared to really, really take any kind of position if you're not familiar with it, if you're not knowledgeable about it or whatever. But from the outside looking in, you just know that peace needs to be had. When I look at Gaza and what has transpired there, those are not livable conditions. You can slice it any way you want to. Those are not livable conditions. And because those are not livable conditions, you understand, and you have people and you see children starving, like literally crying for food, crying for bread, crying for water, all of us should stand up and say, how can we resolve that? The president appears to have done that. Now, we don't know how sustainable it is because we never really, really do when it comes to that area of our world and the conflict that exists. But there is no denying that it's progress. And, you know, listen, Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize before he was in office. Make no mistake about it. Trump wants that for himself. It's clearly obvious that he does. But just because he wants it and he's clamoring for it, that's an entirely different conversation as to whether or not he will deserve it if he's pulled this off and we're able to legitimately point to 8 different wars that he's neutralized throughout this world. If that is something that he has pulled off when all is said and done with his presidency, then he'll have to be viewed differently. We won't have a choice. Those are the facts. That's a reality that's inescapable. And we have to remember that. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I thank y'all for y'all time. I thank the caller, even though he was rude as hell, for calling me up and correcting me on some of my facts that was wrong. I appreciate that. It makes me better. I got the right facts now. So thank you so much for that. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. We'll be back a week from now, 6 to 8 p.m. Until then, peace and love, everybody. Take care.